Okay, so welcome. My name's Kara Mikas. I'm a litigation paralegal. I live out in Denver, and I am here to kind of address legal issues of this aspect, because I'll be quite honest, I would stare at something and be like, I don't get it. And I break things commonly. If you hand me a screwdriver, I'm asking where's the vodka. So I'm going to leave all of the technical aspects here to Jeff.
All right, my name is Jeff Termeshazen. I sit all day and listen to your people's phone calls. Yeah, the company that I work for writes communication intercept software. We do everything from when you call your bank and this call may be monitored for recording purposes, through to executing wireless taps, warrants, setting up cell phone towers so the smugglers and drug dealers latch onto the suitcase cell tower so we can record those calls.
Did you say which company?
No, sorry.
He's got a contract.
Maybe. Depends just how drunk. So we do that kind of thing, and we're pretty much worldwide. We've got offices in the US, UK, APAC. We pretty much are big brother.
Boo. Someone's big brother.
If you can't beat him, join him. At least this way I know what's being listened to and I can see if mine's on there.
Right.
Sometimes. sometimes we're bad people. We actually do need to do bad things too. That's right.
Creepy uncle and a cell phone.
So today we're talking about cell phone forensics and what we can and can't do with them and how they differ with your regular computer and your laptop and whatnot. Largely because our mobile technology is becoming more and more pervasive. Probably within the next decade or so, most folk won't even have PCs at home, or they'll be sitting largely idle. And pretty much everyone will be working off of their cell phones and smartphones and iPads and whatnot as their primary communication devices. So there are some huge differences between those two as far as forensics go. The legal side, I hope at least, should be relatively similar as far as seizures and requiring warrants and whatnot for the devices. A big part of the problem there becomes the practicality. Most people don't lug their desktops around with them. So, you know, if you're executing a warrant at home, there's a pretty good chance their desktop will be at the home. If you're trying to get someone's cell phone, it's a whole different ball of wax. The data is a lot harder to destroy on the cell phone. On the other hand, you can also just toss it into water and hope for the best.
Well, and I know, too, that a lot of mobile phone companies are generally unresponsive when you send in a warrant, asking even just for phone records. This is not even trying to get anything beyond that, but, you know, I want to know what, you know, dude was doing on X day. Who was he talking to at what time? And I'm not asking for names, just times and phone numbers to kind of get an idea of what he was doing. For example, one of our cases right now has a person who hit another person and was reportedly talking on his cell phone at the time of that accident. It would be really beneficial for us in proving liability if we were able to get his records. Verizon, love them, pretty much has ignored everything that we've sent to them. And I am in a little bit of a quandary without getting court intervention about how we're actually going to get this stuff. So it's not as easy.
Well, see, another big part of the problem is not just getting the data, but actually be able to use it in court. And that's a huge part of the problem with forensics, is not just getting the data, but actually being able to prove that this is the data that was on there and that has been tampered with between you getting it and it arriving in court. Mobile forensics produce a whole new range of issues there with the physical devices themselves. With your computer, everything's pretty much on the hard drive. You've got a limited amount of information that's in memory on your, you know, in RAM itself, which requires a live pool of what's in memory at the time. But your cell phone, most of what you're playing with is stored in volatile memory. And that which is not stored, if it's on the phone itself, is usually stored in the little NAND chips and whatnot. And I don't know if it was simply for form factor, but there's a horrible, well, I can't really say horrible because it is kind of nifty, chip design called a BGA, a ball grid array, which is a way of surface mounting devices with a very low form factor. So instead of having like those pins that stand up like half an inch, these things are almost flat on the circuit board. The problem is getting those things off without actually destroying the data. Normally with your pins, you can, you know where your power pins are, and you can simply clip a lead onto there if necessary to keep giving it power, so when you disconnect the thing, it doesn't dump whatever was in there. Can't do that with the ball grids because their leads are actually under the chip. You can't physically get to them. You've also got the problem of they're physically soldered onto the drive and you can't get to those pins at all. So what they've usually got to do is they wind up heating up the entire device and then hitting it either with even a hair dryer would do it, hair dryer or some sort of infrared thing to actually melt the tin leads, and then they can remove the device from that there. Your problem with that though is that if you don't heat up the board first, as soon as you heat up the chip, they do what is called a popcorn effect. When they're making the chip, there's little layers of water inside there, and all those wind up bubbling the chip and pretty much destroying what was ever inside there. So the physical side of getting that data is a whole lot different from simply pulling a hard drive and sticking in and making a bit copy off of that. So if you're doing bad things with your cell phones, don't, because it's really, really hard to do any kind of anti-forensics on them. Obviously, your SIM card is really simple. You know, if you're downloading dirty pictures from your SIM card, you can just remove the SIM card and it's gone. But if they're stored on your phone itself, yeah, it's a lot harder to get rid of it, simply because even if you delete it, it's not hard to go back in and reconstruct what was there. Let's move on to how we would get something like that.
I see a lot of problems with this. I mean, I see things that could be fought in court. For example, it's my understanding that the majority of cell phone forensics are done by making a copy or an imprint of what's actually on the phone versus pulling or extracting the information from the phone in order to somewhat preserve the evidence. So if they screw up, the phone is still there and they can get back at it. But I see problems with the whole copy to yep. do that. I think that it's arguable in court that you could say, no, the original evidence wasn't examined and therefore I'm totally getting out of this. Yes, sir. I think we have a microphone running around here.
Who's got the mic?
One second, sir. Sorry, we can't hear you.
Anyone having a floating mic? No, it seems to have a floating mic.
Nice, sir.
Oh, they do.
Most of the states have laws on the books that allow electronic copies as legal documents. That's getting to be pretty much so standard.
Mm-hmm.
So if they make a legal copy, and a lot of it has to do with how they obtain the copy of it, it's a legal court document. Same as if you make a photocopy of a original document and present that to the court.
Yeah, but the problem there becomes is proving that your copy is actually a exact copy.
That's why you have to do non-destructive testing and then checksums.
Right. Going through the checksums and whatnot. But what she's saying is with the mobile devices, because they are so hard to get to sometimes, it's a lot easier to argue that your original or that your copy is not necessarily the same as your original.
Which is, again, arguing back and forth between the company
yes.
that does it or the government agency that does it
yep.
and the copy. Still cases to be proven in court.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely there. But with a hard drive, it's a lot easier to sure. prove that your checksum is the same, you know, what of the copy that is or the original. But with a cell phone, it's just so much more difficult because, for example, the old Blackberries, the original Blackberries, they were horrible because if you popped those chips at all, the data was gone.
Yeah, it killed it.
You couldn't even disconnect the battery. If you disconnected the battery, the drive was wiped. So, you know, you really had to do some finagling to essentially get wires onto the contacts to get current going through the phone before you move the battery, or you've just destroyed all your evidence. And I'm sure there's more than one person who did that and realized, oops, I just lost the entire case. I'm sure you'd like to see that as a defense attorney going, yeah, we just lost the primary piece of evidence.
Actually, I don't do defense work.
Oh, okay.
I do plaintiff work solely. Defense work is owned by insurance companies and Verizon. So, But
I have a real, sorry, I have a real quick question. When it comes to extracting data, I know some chip hackers have gone to shaving or dissolving the upper part of the package to access the internals of the chip from the top side instead of the bottom side. Have you heard any about that being used in mobile forensics? And
no, it's simply too dangerous. The hacker doesn't care if the thing gets destroyed. They would like the data, but they're not going to lose a case if it gets destroyed. The legal folks are a lot more careful about stuff like that, simply because, you know, if you're talking a $2,000 or $3,000 civil lawsuit, no one really cares. You know, if you're talking about, you know, the Unabomber, they're going to care if you wind up destroying their major piece of evidence. So yeah, no, while it is technically possible, most folks just steer away from it simply because they are safer, even if they're more expensive and longer processes.
So I think one important thing to kind of mention here is, and I'm sad to say this, but I think the United States is actually sadly lacking in the laws and civil enforcement of personal rights. I think Europe is really much more up there on their strictures. For example, I was reading something earlier that said that the European countries have laws on the books that say that employers must exactly and completely specify that they are going to, say, go through your cell phone, your text messages, whatever, or they can't do it at all. So if you're using your cell phone for personal use and you're in Europe and your employer said don't do that, and you do it anyway, well, then you've kind of hit a gray, shady area. But if you're using your business cell phone purely for business purposes, and then for one, I think I just messed that up. Anyway, going back to topic, I think America's just sadly lacking in our personal rights on that area.
Yeah, there is a lot of assumption there. One of the things being, if you're using your work's devices, the work owns them. You've got no real expectation of privacy to anything that work issues you. So if you're texting on your company cell phone, they probably don't care enough to check on it, but they could go in and very happily see all the texts you've been sending on your phone and whatnot. They can reclaim the device at any time, as it is company property. And if they're nice, they'll let you get, you know, back your personal contact list, any pictures you have on the SIM card and whatnot, but they don't have to. And yeah, they are definitely lacking in that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Contact your local legislature, because we're definitely behind the eight ball on that one.
Then the other thing that is also coming up now that I think Europe's also better on is the location tagging with mobile devices, especially the Apple stuff with the GPS things and whatnot. And where Apple develops these tables for location, essentially, every time your phone registers with a tower or something, it downloads tables from where you are, so that when you like pull up your maps, it gives you an idea of where you are. It's not actually pulling directly off of the satellite. It's pulling off a bunch of tables from a whole bunch of information that's been pulled from a whole bunch of people who have previously been in that area. And so you're actually triangulated to where you are based off of that data. But it still means that your location is being sent back to Apple, whether you know it or not. There's also, and I don't know if Apple's turned this on yet as a default, when you take pictures and whatnot, you get a bunch of extra data in the picture itself called XIF data, and there are phones and things which actually tag like latitude and longitude onto the picture. So if you sit and take it and upload it to Facebook, and you can download plugins for this stuff, someone pulls up your Facebook page, right clicks, show XIF data, they can see exactly date, time, your camera model, you know, aperture, focal length, latitude, longitude of where that picture was taken at the time, which is also nifty for court cases, because like, yeah, no, we weren't at some party, and someone goes on Facebook and say, hey, you were there. No, that wasn't that party. Yeah, it was. Your latitude and longitude put you smack there at such and such a time. And so a lot of folk have got no idea that this information is even in there. And a lot of times it's fun just to browse on the internet. You know, go through Facebook or MySpace or whatever, you know, right click and see what information is on those pictures, because a lot of time you freak people out just by saying this is what you've posted, and they're going, oh my god, you're a stalker. You're like, no, you stuck it on there. Yeah, You know, it's like you're holding up a sign saying, here I am, like, what's it, Foursquare? Location, like, here I am. Oh, you're a stalker. I'm like, no, you're holding up the sign that says you're here.
I didn't even know that was possible. I guess.
Right. Everything you upload to Facebook is Facebook's property. So, yeah, you're stuck with that. You got a question?
I just wanted to comment that Google Plus is being much more open to this, that you can just click and flip over a picture and it will show you all of that information without any type of plugin, including the fact that apparently almost all pictures are taken in 1970.
Yeah. Question over here.
Who can actually read all that stuff that pops up when you go to some site? It's like 10 pages long, and all you have to do is click it. It reminds me of a South Park episode where Steve Jobs showed up and basically said, you know, it reads. Read.
Yep. I remember there was some company who did a EULA that was actually similar to that Soul thing, and they simply wanted to see how many people would do this. Was that?
It was a British game rental company.
Right. And basically, when you clicked OK, you were selling them your soul. And they were very nice. They said, yeah, we're returning. We just did an experiment, so we're giving you all your souls back, but we just want you to be aware that you sold us your soul when you clicked on this game.
Hi, quick question for you. I know that in a lot of countries in Europe, passphrases and passwords for in-situ encryption are not... It's not considered self-incrimination, so you can be forced to disclose them. Do you think that there's any movement in the United States about instituting similar policies in that, okay, maybe you don't have to give us your password, but you still have to force you to decrypt the information, because it's like we're not going to require that you give us the combination to your safe, you just have to open it for us.
No, I think that's Border Control Act.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they still force you to give it or they just don't let you into the country.
I don't think that the government's actually doing much, if anything, to protect the average citizen. They're doing a whole lot to...
No, first one at the back there, the guy in the blue shirt.
...make it easier for government entities to get into your personal information. So, again, this is another reason why you need to be in touch with your congressman saying, this is what I want. Let's get it going.
As far as I know, but the only folk who've got sort of protection against it are lawyers, and that's if they're on an active case, and they can go, yeah, I've got documents here that are court documents that I can't show to you. And sometimes they'll let them through, sometimes they'll need to go to a judge and say, yeah, that is actually an active case, don't open it. But other than that, the U.S. could, because we had a panel on this a couple years ago, and we had another lawyer here, and he was like, he's been through that. And for the most part, they'll just say, you can't come into the country. You know, if you're a foreigner, they'll just send you back. And otherwise, you'll just sit in their thing until you let them see what's on your hard drive or phone or whatever they've got there.
Okay. You're kind of leading into it here. I had a curiosity about the legal side of it. And if you could give examples of the differences for individual protections between something that is, say, paper record, computer record, and mobile record, and how sort of that changes for our personal defense or privacy.
The mobile in what way?
I'm just curious if there's a legal difference between my cell phone as a device and the information that it stores, depending on legally how that can be obtained, versus my computer, which more often sits in my house with the digital information that's on that, and the laws that are currently in place and potentially being worked on for it.
I think that's a you question.
I don't know that, you know, anything's necessarily any different. I think that warrants have to be issued and, you know, the evidence taken by appropriate authorities or what have you. I don't think there's any necessary difference between mobile device and what's at your house in terms of, you know, specifying, well, I want this done in this manner. It's a warrant to seize, and it's just done. I don't know of any difference.
For example, if you're taking pictures of something.
Sorry, if you're taking pictures of an event and a cop comes up and demands your phone, I know there's some back and forth legalese going on between various states as to whether the cop has the right to do that if you've not actually done anything wrong. You're not being arrested, there's nothing going on, but they saw that you were there taking a picture of something and they just take your phone.
That's sick.
So in some cases that's being thrown out, and in some cases they're saying, no, that's completely fine for the cop to do that.
And I think that's a state decided issue, varying from state to state. You know, I'd like to think that generally they would say, yeah, that is theft, but states will surprise you.
At the very least, the cop should be giving you a receipt saying, I took your device.
Right.
I just want to add in that also if you're arrested, they have the right to take your phone at the same time and go through it as well. And I have actually seen that happen, and it is, unless you get another officer on site to state you can't take that, it is in their right to take it, especially if it's posted, you can't take a picture, which that is actually, believe it or not, in a lot of places.
Well, there's also a difference between what they can do and what they can use against you in court, because even the cops can screw up evidentiary rules.
That's true.
And so it is possible that they do something, and they're like, oh, you're going to jail for this. And by the time it gets to the court, the lawyers are like, yeah, no, don't even bother. You know, this is so badly screwed up as far as chain of custody goes, which is one of the issues, one of the reasons the cop's supposed to give you a receipt if they take anything from you, is to show that, yes, I've actually assumed control of this. Yeah, you know, and you're supposed to be able to say, I have a receipt that says my device was seized in such and such a time and whatnot.
And I think this is still such a newer issue that not all of the police have been properly trained on the chain of evidence and how to deal with mobile devices. So it's quite likely that you'll have something arguable when you get to court. But at that moment, I think I would just let it go. Password protect everything and then claim the Fifth.
And don't be ashamed to claim the Fifth. They can't make you say anything. There is one big technical difference, though, in seizing the mobile devices versus seizing PCs and whatnot, and that is carrier connection. My system being at state X when it's turned off or just powered on is one thing. If it connects to a network, that state's automatically changed. So you've got a problem there when, from a forensic level, when you're seizing these devices, because, for example, if it's in transit and someone sends you a text message, your device state's not changed. So the question then becomes is, how do you protect that data? Sure, you can stick it in a, you know, anti-riffed bag that will block all scans, but again, you've just changed the state now because you've gone from being on network where it's receiving updates to being off network. So it's in a certain protected state at that point, but as soon as you take it out again, it's going to reconnect to the network. You can't power it down because you lose everything that's in memory at that point.
And this is key. Not that we're telling you how to get around this, but if you've got stuff that you're trying to hide, let your batteries run out from time to time.
Yeah. Because Or pull them. Because a lot of that stuff is kept in volatile memory, and once your power goes, it's gone. And nothing's going to get that back. So again, which is why, if you're really feeling bad, throw it in water and hope for the best.
Hi, I have a question which I hope was not covered because I came a little late, but using stuff at work, which I hope everybody here knows you should do because you have no protection. You know, in terms of the Constitution was written, you know, against the government. It doesn't really protect you against private employers snooping through all your stuff, which a lot of them do. But I have a kind of question as to where is there a difference between doing something on your break time using your own device, your own network, and just doing, well, obviously there is a difference, but do private employees snoop when it's like not using their device or network? We know. I hope you all know that they snoop when you're using their stuff.
They wouldn't know if you're not using their stuff.
Okay.
I mean, like if you're using your phone and connecting, you know, check your home messages and whatnot, they may see you using it, but they've got no way of tracking that. Well, unless you work for a company that actually does intercepts.
And I don't think that they would necessarily address that issue unless you were involved in some sort of criminal activity involving your work that would enable them to pull your cell phone into it, your personal
right.
cell phone. So I, as a rule, I'd say no.
Question here?
Kind of a two-part question. Being a mobile device, if
any type of hacking, downloading, whatever criminal activity was committed on it, what's, regardless of this actually happened or if this is just what the person said happened, you know, so you lose your phone, so you left your phone laying around, somebody got into it and used it. I didn't do it. It's a mobile phone, so I let my brother borrow it. He did it. I let my coworker use it to make a phone call, and they did it. And, you know, regardless if that's an excuse, how do you approach that from a legal standpoint? And from a technical standpoint, how do you prevent that? Like, periodically, maybe you have let a lot of people use your device. Hey, I need to borrow your phone for a second. Hey, can I check my email real quick on your phone? If you do that, from a technical standpoint, how can you go and wipe out your phone with a disk overwrite, like disk sweeper for PC? Is there a technical or is there a mobile version of something like that?
Well, as you know, our legal system is perfect and doesn't make mistakes, so you shouldn't really need anything like that. In general, it can be done, but it's really, really hard. It's nothing that you're going to go just buy off the shelf. You pretty much have to go get forensic level equipment. You can do things like, if you work for like one of the cell phone companies or the cell phone reprovisioners, they've actually got things that will reflash the whole system back to a state. But again, if you've got the forensic tools, you can go in and recover what were, or at least a good portion of what was there prior to that, because at that point it's just like a hard drive. If you reformat the hard drive, you can still pull up data off of it until it's been rewritten a certain number of times. As you write more and more onto the drive, you'll be able to pull less and less off because it gets more and more corrupted. But if it's like soon after reprovisioning, you can usually pull quite a bit of data off of that again. But it's nothing simple. The only thing that you've got really good ready access to is the internal memory that you get like through USB plus your SIM card. Everything else is stored in more protected areas. That's kind of changing with smartphones and tablets because you can root them now. When you get to that level, yeah, you can go through and start wiping, you know, at a lower level so you can get more protection out of that. But you're still not going to get the level of ability to wipe things you would off of a straight hard drive.
And from a legal aspect, at this point in time, you'd be looking at how you're going to defend it in court. I mean, and also how whatever was being looked at. In a civil matter, when you get to court, it's proven by a preponderance of the evidence. In a criminal matter, if a juror has even one doubt that you're not guilty of it, that's the way it is intended to move. So you would have to, you know, be able to show, yes, I let this person borrow my phone this day, this person borrow my phone this day. I'm really not the one who did that. And in a criminal investigation, if you put that out there and you had, you know, enough to show and give one person even one doubt of your innocence or guilt, then it would be pushed off. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't anything that directly speaks to it that I'm aware of. It's just, if you're going to get in trouble, you're in trouble, and then you deal with it in court. So,
question. He's also had to stand for a while, so do him after. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you were talking about how on the phones a lot of the incriminating evidence might be in volatile memory. If a cop asks you for your phone and you give him just that, but take the battery out first and tell him he cannot have the battery, is there any legal issues that could cross with that?
That's a you question.
I think at that point you'd be kind of going on the luck of, are you dealing with a temperamental cop? I mean, you know, is he just going to get mad? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
People have cell phones to report that.
Sure.
How about just saying, I do not consent to any searches?
Well, that might work for you. But
well,
again,
the thing is, you say it, they may do it anyway.
Yes.
But you have stated that you did not consent.
And then you just hope you don't have a temperamental cop.
Yeah.
Oops, they stumbled. I didn't mean to send it across the drive.
Right.
Road.
Right.
Yeah.
And it also depends on why they asked to see it. Again, it becomes, if they see that you've got like kiddie porn in your phone, they are fully within their rights to simply seize that phone because it's something that they can see is illegal. You talking like, or you taking pictures at a public, at Phillips Arena at some public rally, and then taking it there, that's a whole different thing because then it's supposition of maybe you've done something wrong versus them actually having seen you've done something wrong and they're processing you because of that. So if you yanked your battery at that, you'd be a lot more trouble than if it was just, you know, we don't like you talking here, we think you should go somewhere else.
Hi, my question is like a piggyback on that. If they take your phone and there is a password, because I don't know for sure, but I think if you put in the wrong password 3 times, it will like erase your phone or whatever, and they won't be able to...
It usually just locks it. It rarely wipes it.
Oh, okay, I thought it did that. But no, you can say no, no, I don't know the password, or I'm not going to give it to you.
No, don't tell them you don't know the password. Just say, I do not give this to you. Now, if it's a company phone, they may simply call your company, have your company unlock it, like if it's a BlackBerry or something, in which case you can do nothing about it. But, you can say, I do not, you know, I will not give you this password. They may still arrest you. You're refusing it doesn't mean that they're going to let you go because, well, gee, shucks, we didn't get their password. We'll let you go this time. It'll be a case, right? We're going to go into jail until you give us the password.
And so, I have a question for you, too. It's my understanding that the Droid, the passwords, the swipe locks on there, they haven't been able to break into those yet. Is that true, or...?
I've not heard that they've cracked it, but...
Buy a Droid.
Yeah. Yeah, clean your screen. Now, I'm sure there are phones. I mean, you do get secure phones that probably could be programmed to wipe it. But at consumer level stuff, just because Verizon, AT&T don't deal with the hassle, the odds of them sending it to actually wipe the phone if you enter too many times is almost negligible. So simply because they have everyone whining, oh, my kid got hold of my phone and wiped it, and I need it back again, and I'm going to sue you if you don't get it back to me. And they're just like, yeah, that's just too much effort for us.
One of the points that's very salient with what's on your phone is some crimes and laws in states are set for possession. For instance, child porn. Possession is the crime.
Yes.
Not how you got it. It's that you have it. And in a public venue with so many people out there who are now videotaping or using your camera phones to take photos of something that goes on, you're now creating evidence in a public crime. So they're seizing your phone or your camera device, not because you've done anything wrong, but because you just collected evidence for them.
Yep.
And it's perfectly legal.
So don't take pictures? I don't know.
Well, what they'll normally do is they'll normally go probably sit you down and ask you, hey, we need a copy of this, and or we're taking the phone because it's got evidence on it. And you can come collect it like in a week or tomorrow or whenever there. They usually want the problem giving it back to you. They should make sure that their folk get to it first so that when it comes to chain of custody, the defense lawyer can't be going, this guy brought it in the next day and there's no way to prove that the picture he took last night was the same one that you downloaded this morning.
See, I think that's arguable, though. I think after a while they'd be able to go, you know what, that phone is no longer in anyone's possession other than the owner's and it's been tampered with. And
no, that's what I'm saying, is that that's why the cops will seize it at the event.
It's after the trial. It becomes no longer lawfully evident in law enforcement after the trial date plus whatever it is they have a period typical for appeals. All appeals are exhausted. A lot of times they're keeping evidence after the guy gets out of prison.
Okay.
So I have my phone, but it's on a work plan. I purchased this phone with my money. Do I have any different rights, or is it the same that you described?
I think that one would get decided in court.
Yeah.
I think that would be hotly contested.
As a general rule, though, err on the side of you losing simply because it's safer. you might wind up winning, but you'll save yourself a lot of grief if you just don't do anything that brings up to a point of court in the first place.
All right, so if your phone is locked and they don't know the password and you don't give it to them, and you can wipe your phone remotely, but they have to, you know, keep it from changing states from one to the other to keep it from updating or anything, but say they take your phone and then you just go home and say remote wipe, what do they do then?
A lot of times they'll do something like drop it into a bag, into a sealed bag that blocks off all signal, and then depending on how competent they are, they may take it straight to a Faraday room and actually open up inside a Faraday cage, which means you won't get any signal either. Then create an image off of it that way. That way, by the time it does go onto the network, they can go, hey, look, this phone got wiped. Well, we've got an image of it. Let's go back and see who issued the wipe command. And they can then trace you that back through the phone and go, well, you issued the wipe command. Why'd you do that? So they've already got an image, and in court it'd be a lot harder to prove that, you know, it is the original image and whatnot, but they can probably get you on something else and like tampering with evidence. So, you know, so they may be able to get you on what they originally wanted to, but they may be able to get you on something else.
Hmm. So say even if you set up something automatically saying, if this phone does not see, you know, this network, you know, your home network within time period X, it auto eats itself.
They'll probably make your life difficult, but I don't think there's a lot they could do to you. Because, I mean, yeah, my phone said to do that. You took it away from me. It's not my fault it wiped it. It's your people's fault you took it away from me. So they probably give you a hard time. You've been in interrogation for a long time, you know, trying to get you to say something that they can use then. But from a evidentiary point of view, depending on what you're using to wipe, because, again, it can be simply like, oh, I formatted my hard drive. It's safe now. It's like, yeah, no, it's not. So depending on what you put on there, so, like, for example, packing with thermite, bad idea, because you'll have lost your phone. They'll never get you on the phone, but they're going to nail you on having thermite.
I don't know.
My question is about company Wi-Fi. What kind of rights do you have with regard to that?
Regardless of whether
it's your phone or the company's phone.
Yeah, I think that's a shady area that's not been defined by the law. I mean, that's something that would ultimately get answered in court. If you're using the company Wi-Fi, anything that you send out over that is, my understanding, could be claimed by the company to look at.
Yep.
You know, granted, you were using your personal phone, and that's where you may have an argument, and that's where you may have a really valid argument, depending on the content that you were transmitting. So, it, again, gray areas, all to be solved in court.
I would think it'd still be if you're on the corporate network and we own the network.
Yes, some of them have, I work for Emory, and part of the agreement for using the Emory website, it was true for Georgia Tech too, it comes up with a screen that says, anything you do on this network is subject to monitoring and could be subject to disciplinary action if it's not within these. And it spells out where all the terms of use are allowed, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. So at least at the university level, that's spelled out very, very clearly every time you pop it up. If you want to use their network, the first thing you see with the login is, before you even get the login, you have to say, I accept that.
Which everyone does like half a second after it pops up.
Right. But it basically, you're giving up that right.
Yes.
Immediately. Sorry. At least in the university environment that I'm in.
No, but most corporate, because we deal with a lot of companies, and they've almost all got that same kind of thing on there. When you're logging in, it says, this system is for authorized people only. Any unauthorized access will land you in all kinds of trouble. Don't do it. And if you think you're on the wrong network, disconnect and go make sure.
Well, so I would say here that basically if there's something that you're afraid of having someone see, don't do it. I mean,
yes.
Go have that conversation in a blackened out room and whisper like they used to do in the old gangster movies. Don't get on your cell phone and go, hey, let's go knock that guy out because you're going to get in trouble.
My question revolved around obstruction of justice and more specifically anticipated obstruction of justice. Like the guy that at UTK who hacked into Sarah Palin's email account, if he had just admitted to the hacking in, he would have gotten off with a misdemeanor. The fact that he tried to cover up his tracks, he got a felony charge for that.
Right.
So how does anticipatory obstruction play into this, if at all?
At what level, the legal or the forensic?
The legal. Or both.
Wow. You know, I think we are addressing topics that are not yet satisfied by law. I'd like to say that there was a defined answer, but, I mean, we run into areas where it depends on what state you're in, what case law already exists there. Because you could get away with something, say, for example, in Florida that had no case law on the books, or if you were in Maine and it does have case law already on the books where someone set precedent, you wouldn't get away with the same activity. It's a gray area.
But when he was saying, like, setting up to auto wipe, could that potentially be established as anticipatory obstruction of justice? Or is that just too vague?
You know, I think it depends on how good your attorney is.
What arguments are you going to raise?
Because it could honestly go either way. For example, with what I do with my company, they'd probably say, yeah, it's fine, because you've got customer data in your system, and some of that stuff has got legal obligations that, for example, I've got one customer that we can't send anything to developers overseas. Everything we do with that company has to be inside the United States only. Then if you're dealing with government agencies, you've got issues with, again, exporting data. So in situations like that, having something that'll actually wipe your system would not be considered overkill. If you're a private person and you make a habit of doing something like that, you could probably argue that it was just part of your nature. But if you're running, you know, open Wi-Fi, your doors are unlocked, and your cell phone's the only thing that's got that on, they're probably going to go, well, you know, there's something we should probably be having a look at as far as that goes.
On the topic of securely wiping, like fully wiping mobile devices, you talked about rooting. On some devices, I know for most of the Motorola Android smartphones, the manufacturer's SBF file, which is if you go to the store and you have them wipe it professionally, that's freely available. You can, so for some devices, you can do a complete wipe on all levels.
Define complete wipe.
It's what they use to factory reset phones when they refurbish them and sell them again.
Yeah, but you can still restore that data. It's not quite the same, but it's like when you delete a file off a hard drive. The file's still physically there. They just simply remove the first part.
Okay, assuming that, I guess that also goes down to what type of system they're actually using to store the data on the smartphone, because if they're using a physical hard drive, then like magnetic storage based, then that's recoverable. But if you're using something like Flash, aren't there other issues with trying to recover the data?
It depends which data. If it's the basic OS, no. That has to be written to non-volatile, or otherwise you'd lose your entire system every time you unplug your battery.
Is personal information stored on the non-volatile memory?
That's going to depend on the manufacturer.
Okay, thank you.
For the most part, though, you would say yes. Anything that's there when you plug your battery back in is non-volatile. Anything that you lose when you unplug your phone is volatile. So anything that's in there, for example, on chips, now recovering off of chips is different from recovering off of a hard drive, obviously. That's probably the simplest definition, is that if you unplug your phone completely and it's got no power, no battery, nothing, anything you lose at that point is volatile. Anything that's there when you plug it back in again can be recovered even if you've deleted it. Now, something like a flash prom where you physically flash it, that would be different from like wiping your SIM card. So it's going to depend on what they're storing where on the device. The only way to be absolutely sure is to take out a hammer and just destroy that thing.
When we're talking about, like, if you're, you know, at a venue and you're taking public pictures, of course, and people have a tendency to do like, so like small, like little 15-second AVIs. I'm sure you guys that with the EFF have seen the thing in the news about the guy in Illinois that's 75 years for taking the image of the cop beating the guy with his phone. And of course, they took his phone, they arrested him, they're going to charge him with felony eavesdropping. And the contention is because he took audio. He could record the cop beating the guy, and that's okay. But if you audio record an officer, here in Georgia, I believe somebody said that there was a president. I haven't verified that one. But I know in the case of Illinois, the guy's facing 75 years for 5 counts. Is that if you record an officer without their permission, that's considered eavesdropping. And while they can record you, you can't record them. And it subjects you to a possible jail sentence, as well as confiscation, of course, of your phone that you did indeed take said image, said audio, for your own prosecution.
Well, I think, again, that varies state to state, and the eavesdropping laws are different in every state. For example, out in Colorado, only one person needs to be aware of the fact that a conversation is being recorded, and that person can be you. So you can do that all day. Now, how it applies to law enforcement, that I think is going to vary from state to state as well. I don't know that I've seen that actually defined nationwide yet.
I know with Georgia, same thing. It's single party permission, but you have to be one of the parties actually involved. So like in a divorce case, the husband can't listen in on his wife and her boyfriend having a conversation, but the wife can record any conversation without the other person knowing at all because she's one of the involved parties. but I don't know about other states. I just know one for Georgia because we deal with that a lot.
Why are you doing that? Does that make you an involved party? If you don't object yourself in that situation, does that make you involved?
I'm going to say that one would ultimately be decided in court. You know, I mean, you'd like to think so, and you'd like to think that you had the protections by asserting yourself on that, but I think ultimately that judges could rule otherwise.
So, sorry, that's really loud. So one more work snooping related question. So personal cell phone, but you're connecting to your work email. Is your employer within its right, within their rights to snoop you then?
What do you look checking your cell phone? You're checking your work email?
Personal.
Yeah, but basically I set up Exchange email on my phone. No intervention from the IT, personal phone. They don't know anything about it.
Yes, because you're still accessing their system, which is their mail server.
It's okay, so well,
something of theirs is involved in that transaction, so they've got a claim to it. Whether it'll stand up in court is, like she says, up to the court. But they do have a stake in that because you're accessing something of theirs. I'm sorry, what's your name? No, with the mic, lady with the microphone? Michelle,
yeah.
You get a chance, the guy has his hand up for a while.
Yeah, so I have a couple of questions. What rights do you have if you send your computer or cell phone to be repaired with a company? So say your computer's under warranty, you send it to be repaired. Do that? Can they snoop for your stuff and see what's there and report anything?
Can they? Absolutely.
Is it legally permissible? I'd say no.
Right.
Okay, my other question is, if you use something like IP masking, how difficult is it to get past that? How difficult is it to get an encrypted volume broken by the government? And then are there any programs that really do wipe a hard drive?
There are programs that do wipe the hard drive, but they can usually take a couple of weeks to run. I know we've recently been decommissioning servers at work, and we've got DoD level things that go through and just wipe the drive. But it doesn't just delete it. It actually writes the whole drive full, wipes it, writes it again, and then does that process over and over and over again. So it's not just simply deleting, it's creating garbage files for like a week. Before they say, all right, this drive's safe, we can now format and, you know, and send it outside the company. Because at that point, you can still recover what was on the drive, but now you're recovering all the ones and zeros that they wrote, not the data that was there prior to that. From a mobile device, again, it becomes more difficult because most folk don't have that level of access, even on some of the droids. You've got more access when you've rooted your phone, but you've still, there's some of those chips that are still flashed at, like, the manufacturer level that there's simply no way into them. The only way to get to those is actually, you know, physically pull them out and drop them into like an EEPROM reader or something along those lines and pull it that way. So that kind of information you're kind of stuck with. Most folk, though, aren't that technical. So they've got extremely limited access to what they can actually do with something. With like the flash PROMs and stuff, like if you're upgrading your BIOS or something on the computer, that's relatively safe because it's in one or the other state. If it's something like the SIM card, you're right back to it being like a hard drive. You can go through and delete stuff off of there, but unless you go and just wipe it over and over and over again, you can still recover a bunch of information off of those, even though you've wiped it. So it, you know, it depends as to what you're doing and how you're going and how much money you're willing to spend on the software that will actually go and do that. There are very expensive forensic boxes you can buy that will actually pull the data off of the drive and whatnot, but it can also write data, and you can use those to set up things like, you know, just write over and over and over again at the level most folk don't get to, but they're damn expensive. And, you know, do you really want to spend that much money on a single for, you know, just to wipe your phone? It's cheaper just to destroy the phone and buy a new one.
A couple of points on the things that we've heard discussed. Back in April, the ACLU accused the Michigan State Police of collecting data with Cellbright devices that, like you mentioned, pull the entire image from the phone and logging the data. Some of these were done as a result of traffic stops and not related to a specific arrest. So that's one case that's going to be pending. A lot of the ways that the law enforcement gets involved in this
are through case law involving telecommunications before cell phones were even an issue. So you have case law involving search incident to arrest and being able to look at pagers for phone numbers, previous recent calls that have been used. So it's from those that they're stepping into search of the phone, as opposed to the avenue of traditional Fourth Amendment cases where it's considered a paper or effect. And then third point that I wanted to look at was, you know, these are so much more than what they were originally intended to be. It's just, there's, like you said, there's so much out there. We can discuss this in here, but the time to have these discussions when you're interacting with law enforcement isn't on the roadside when you're at a traffic stop or when you're when you're being questioned with the possibility of arrest. Many times the officer will already have a pretty clear idea in his mind of what he believes he can or cannot do, and then the time comes to address these issues in court with your attorney.
Well, and I think to that aspect, the officers will have in his mind what he can or cannot do, but your ability to stand up, know your rights, protect yourself, often changes exactly how that officer is going to deal with that situation.
Yes. So. Yeah, the officers tend to get mean when you tell them no.
Moving to laptops real quick, one thing I do, I run an IT business here in Atlanta, and I will solicit ads on Craigslist telling people that I will unlock the password on their Windows computers. In reality, what I'll normally do is they usually have a store that they bought on eBay and don't have the password or whatnot. So once I unlock it, I'll go in there, look at the files, look for a resume or something like that, find the proper owner, and return the laptop to them. Is there any legal issues that could arise from that?
Hell yes.
You're in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yes.
Most of the cases, they're a stolen laptop.
Doesn't matter, because the person who bought it might not know that it's stolen. But they don't know it, so they still have a right to privacy, which you've just violated. There's, I don't know if you've heard about this, one case right now where a student stole a laptop, and he sold it to another student, and that student then sold it to a teacher. And the laptop had some tracking software in case it ever got stolen. And the company that was monitoring this, it got online, so it's another thing saying, hey, I'm here, I've been stolen. They monitored some naughty webcam sessions between the teacher and her boyfriend or something. And based off of those pictures, they identified who it was. And they're now being sued for invasion of privacy, because the teacher did not know it was stupid, but she didn't know it was stolen. So that hasn't been decided yet, but the argument is that she has a right to privacy because she wasn't involved with the actual theft. They could have done things like check the IP and whatnot. There are other things they could have done to establish identity. What they did was simply the fastest way to do it. But they opened themselves to a huge legal thing. And in cases like that, where you don't know if it's been stolen, you're assuming that it is, that would definitely be considered an invasion of privacy. Now, if it is stolen, you probably may get away with it. But in some case, when someone wants to get difficult about it and you invaded my privacy, I would imagine, be looking at a fairly hefty lawsuit.
You might. I think one of the things that's important to remember here is, as technology is evolving so quickly, the legislation is, 10, 20 years behind it. There's new case law on the books regarding this, but I think as a rule, most judges don't want to start setting precedent and then find out they've done so in error. So it's problematic in that.
I just want to say, I actually work for a Fortune 500 company. I work primarily in the mobile device section, laptops, cell phones, things of that nature. As soon as you put your email on your phone, whether it be personal, work related, you click accept for IT policies. They're at that point in time have full access to your phone. You need to look at their mobile device policy or their device policy and keep a copy, because it's willing to change at any point in time. You accepted it at a certain date, which leads you liable to those policies. Unless you accepted something stating a newer policy, they can't get you on that. They have full access to your cell phone, personal or work, through the Exchange server.
Don't let them think yet or not. Whether you have somebody that's competent enough to know how to do that is up to your company, but they do have full rights to your phone as soon as you click accept to allow your Exchange email on your cell phone. Pop Mail, not so much, not at all actually, but Exchange, yes.
Well, and I think too, right here we need to address the fact that a lot of people work for smaller companies that don't have written policies, and I think that that is...
You want to request one.
Yeah, once the policy's not there, it's not written, you have something arguable when you get to court.
We have the ability also to wipe your phone, do whatever we want remotely. Just heads up.
Hi, I have a legal question. Your cell phone. Is there a legal difference between it being confiscated versus it being seized? And the where I'm going with this is, if a cop confiscates it on the side of the road, and you go home and wipe it versus it being seized during a search and an execute of a warrant, and you later go online and wipe it. This is going back to the question that was asked over here about deleting evidence.
I think it's really kind of dependent upon the circumstances more than anything else. So if you are... say at the side of a road and the cop takes your phone for something that turns out to be legally impermissible, you know, then I think your information is protected then. If someone approaches you with a warrant and says, I'm taking your phone for this reason, it's a whole nother thing that has to be dealt with.
Right.
So, again, it's circumstantial more than anything else.
So now the question is, how's all this going to kind of be rolled in with device manufacturers such as Apple now providing just about mandatory cloud storage for your last X amount of data. I mean, now let's say, you know, you take that 15-second video of a cop beating someone and then it's uploaded onto one of the Apple servers.
You better find a really good attorney. I don't know. I mean, I think the cloud storage issue is really one that's still up there, and it's arguable everywhere. I don't think there's enough case law on the books to actually have an answer, and every situation is going to be different. There's always going to be a new little tweak that you can throw in there that the judge is going to look at and say, okay, fine, based on that, I'm going to deny your motion for summary judgment, and it's not going through. Everything is just circumstantial and dependent on the issues, and cloud is scary.
So the legal system's still crap.
Yes, but what you could do is you could try to make sure you send a copy to Facebook, because if they own it, tell them it's their content. Their lawyers have to cover you now.
That's brilliant.
My question goes to the forensics. So on a device, there, we all know you can get a call log off of there, or you know, your contact list or pictures you've got. What other kinds of things can you pull off of these devices that you have experience with? Such as you've got a device that's out in the wild, can you turn on that front-facing camera so you can see what's going on? Can you turn on the microphone remotely to be able to do those kinds of things whenever you're doing your little suitcase deal?
Depends what's loaded onto it. I mean, it...
Do you have access to all the same?
A phone like this, Motorola, mm-hmm. No. It's just not complicated enough. You talk a tablet? Absolutely. I'm sure there's an app for that somewhere.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that's really my question is, that, do you have the same access to fool with those things and mess with that remotely, turning those things on?
It's harder simply because with them being that much more mobile, you're also going across multiple networks. Because, for example, is your iPad connecting via 3G on the phone system or via a Wi-Fi connection?
Right.
I mean, both is going to get an IP address of some sort, but you've got completely different paths as far as actually getting to it on at a physical layer.
Is there anything else you guys look for when you're going through these devices?
Pretty much everything. Because if we're looking at something like that, we're not looking for anything particular. Your job is to get everything off of that phone so that your investigators can look and decide what they want. So we may have an idea of what you're looking for, like, okay, you're looking for particular pictures. So, all right, we know we want a concentration of that. But your job is not to go get just the pictures and ignore the text log that, you know, describes everything they're doing in the pictures. From a forensic level, it's more just you're getting everything off that the investigators can then go through the whole lot and say, all right, we want this, 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 and this. And then you being able to provide a chain saying, this, 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 and this is exactly what I pulled off of that phone, and it's the exact copy, no change, no nothing. And then being able to back that up in court so that your opposite attorney, whichever side you're working for, can't say, well, that's not the same thing, so we can throw that out.
Just as a reminder, as phones have gotten to be more than phones, most law enforcement agencies now have enough contacts and input within the various cell companies that through a simple administrative subpoena, they can have your phone pinged, turned on remotely, they can listen to it remotely, and download the data off your phone remotely. All perfectly legal and without your knowledge.
Well, if the battery's not out, yes. I mean, because your phone stays a trickle charge, basically. Right. So the unless you pull the battery, it's got some sort of connector. It may not be registering with a particular cell tower at a time, depending on the make and model and whatnot, but I wouldn't trust that unless you knew the make and models really, really well. Basically, if your phone's on, you turn it off. The only thing you can really assume is your phone's not going to ring. But, you know, don't assume that there's not information going back and forth, because there may be.
So you said you take all the data non-discriminately and hand that to the investigators. Now that you've given that to the principal investigator, are they subject to reasonable expansion of search to say, well, should you be allowed to go from this part of the data that you just gave them to this other part of the data? Because that is an expansion of search.
Well, I think if you find content within the data that implies that there is other evidence to be found, you could open the scope of the discovery based on that. I think that's possible, yeah.
Because again, it comes not down to what you find, but what you can use in court. Because actually getting the data is not hard. I mean, for example, with what we do as far as tapping communications, I can record your phone system all day long. The government can record your phone all day long. As long as they don't actually use it against you in court, you'll never know the difference.
There is actually, and I'm looking at this now, new case law on the books from the Ninth Circuit back in last year, 2010, that segregating electronic data that is seizable from that which is not must not become a vehicle for the government to gain access to data which it has no probable cause. So that kind of speaks to your question. If you find something contained within that data that would indicate that there's other evidence out there, yes, I think that would open the scope of the discovery. But beyond that, if they don't have probable cause, they can't.
Technical question on the remote activation of mobile devices by carriers or other people with that level of access. When you put your phone into airplane mode, if you wanted to just totally sever the connection, will airplane mode or anything you can do to the phone other than totally removing the batteries or powering it down if it's an iPhone, will that sever the connection where it can't be remotely overridden?
It'll depend on the phone and the make and the model, but I would not make that assumption.
On a different type of mobile device, is there any federal legislation pending as far as telemetry on automobiles? Because insurance companies are wanting that data in the event of tickets, accidents, what have you. There was a case recently in Memphis where a police officer got off on a hit-and-run fatality, even though telemetry on his police car showed he was going over 100 miles an hour and not to a call. It was basically shift change, and he was heading back to the station and was in a single-car wreck. And unbelievably, he actually got off on that because his attorney was able to argue that the telemetry data was damaged. And I wonder if there's anything pending at the federal level, and if it's state by state, what do the majority of the states decide as far as who that data belongs to? The owner of the vehicle, the manufacturer, or is it public knowledge?
Wow. I think that's a legal issue that hasn't really been fully explored. I know that insurance companies and defense attorneys are doing everything that they possibly can to prove their cases and not pay personal injury monies any longer as hard as they can to avoid that. I think it's a state-by-state issue. I could be wrong in that, you know, Oldsmobile is owned nationwide. Will the federal legislature ever address that? Is questionable. Again, everything is kind of a gray area now with the new technology, and how the situations are being handled is on a state-by-state basis for now. I think we probably want to leave it that way. If we give the feds too much power, it's not going to be pretty later.
Or if we stop the bastards from taking it.
I'm sorry?
Or if we stop the bastards from taking it. They did that with the whole little interstate commerce clause. Yeah. Ooh, they pulled a lot of information out of that one.
But that's a whole nother panel.
That's
Morris
panel.
That's Morris panel.
All right, we're at time. Does anyone have any questions? Take one more question. Any of them are good as long as you're behaving yourself.
Yeah, string in a paper cup. Just don't have too much expectation of privacy.
Yeah.
Well,
that's where it comes in. The anti-forensics are really hard on cell phones simply because everything is so locked down. But yeah, get a phone that is open as possible, something that you can complete and utterly root. And if you're willing to pay the money, buy the forensic hardware to get in and get down to the layers that are not accessible by just opening up this system.
Okay, but basically it boils down to this. If you're not doing anything illegal, you don't have that much to be concerned about.
Right.
If you are doing something illegal, shame on you, and then you should go buy a disposable throwaway cell phone that you don't care about.
And destroy it afterwards. Don't just drop it somewhere.
All right, I got a technical question real quick. Our company uses a BlackBerry server. When I'm at home, it's a company-issued phone, and I'm on my own Wi-Fi. Does that get back to them? Yeah, because even if I turn off the Wi-Fi or the actual network connection, I'm not really worried about what I go on to, but I'm just curious if they're kind of stealing my Facebook password or whatever. Also, if I use a secure connection, SSL, does that, because they're like a proxy, does that still
interfere? They physically will not be tracking the data because it's not going across their network, but your phone may well be storing your key presses.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of company policies with BlackBerry's, mine included, actually firewall, so it goes back to my corporate and then out. So in that case, it is possible. Like with my BlackBerry, which I have two separate phones, I have a work phone, I have a personal phone. My BlackBerry, I'm still firewall. Everything that I do goes to corporate and then goes out public. The company will not bother to look for that data unless there's something brought up against you, because they simply don't have the time or money to search for nothing. But it is still accessible if the case is brought up against you.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't care about all that.
Right.
And then the other question is, if the phone has a security wipe feature, does that actually do anything except like just reset the password or something, or does it actually do anything meaningful?
No, it'll wipe things to varying degrees, but it's not really designed to wipe at a forensic level. It's usually to stop folk from stealing your contact lists and your personal info.
Now, why don't the manufacturers make them wipe at a personal level and put it in that, make it
where it can
do that?
Because it's way expensive and... It's just.
Don't you pay enough for your monthly cell phone service now?
I mean, they can put it in, but they're making their own lives difficult. It's not their job to really secure your phone. They're just there to give you a phone that they make money off of it.
Yeah, but they don't make it where you can secure your own. Where'd you warranty if
you
root?
You can buy them. They're just not usually commercial level. Usually like military grade phones and whatnot.
I have one last forensics question, and this. Not doing any illegal, just a little concerned about password. I have old phones, old PDAs, old hard drives. What do I do if I want to just get rid of them?
Find a big bonfire.
or honestly, one of the way that we normally do it is run a drill through it. Like if you've got a hard drive, you take a press drill, run it through three, like in a triangle, it's gone.
Okay, that's it. Just need to get rid of it.
All right, thanks for coming, guys.